in on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. This hour of Canuck Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Let's bring in our next guest. Our insider here on Canuck Central, it is Frank Saravalli. He is a presentation of Angry Otter Liquor. Thanks for this, Frank. How was your holiday season?
Oh, it was pretty good, guys. How about you?
Yeah, consumed way too much food. The Feast of the Seven Fishes in the Italian household was a little much, not going to lie. The lasagnas and the turkeys and everything else. But, you know, back on the treadmill this week. We're good.
See, look, I love the tradition, but we don't do the seven fishes because, frankly, I think like five of them are gross. So how'd you get through it?
You just consume as much as you can with some adult beverages and whatnot, and then you see where you go the next day. I will be honest with you. I don't think I partake in all seven dishes either. So I see where you're going with this.
Yeah, I think you got to sub some out. Like if you were to work in like lobster and crab cakes or
there you go.
I don't know, something more like some sushi, like I'd be all over it, but I think the seven traditional ones just
Substitute a few others and bring in some different cuisines. I like that. It's a good idea. It's maybe the future.
Fusion Thanksgiving, the Christmas fusion, get together.
Yeah, the fusion Feast of the Seven Fishes. Maybe something to workshop here, Frank. All right, let's get into it because never a dull moment with the Vancouver Canucks, obviously, and there's been a lot going on with the team and a lot still centered around Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. I saw Elias Pettersson making his way onto your latest trade targets list at number 25. What are you hearing with how the Canucks are handling this situation with their two star centermen?
Well, the Canucks have certainly, as all of this has swirled over the last, I mean, feels like a month now, maybe less than that, but it feels like a month, have taken the opportunity with the phone calls that have come in. All these teams see the reporting, they mm-hmm. hear it all, and they call to ask questions. So they're gauging the market on if they were to potentially move one of these players, what that would look like. Now, are they any closer to making a move? I don't know. That said, I still think that there's so many obstacles here that I'm not saying it's unlikely. I just, it's a really sizable franchise altering decision to make. And to do it, if you're going to do it in season, you've got to work through a long list of things to get there. It just feels like this is very complicated to unpack right now.
I'm with you. And I think the other thing that complicates it is teams obviously are interested. They probably are interested at getting one of these players at a discount. And I think the Canucks, especially for Pettersson, have an astronomical ask if they're looking to move him. And I just have a hard time seeing somebody meeting that ask during the season.
Right. And not only that, but if you're doing it from a Canucks perspective, would you like, you're not getting futures back for Pettersson.
Mm-hmm.
So would you want to cut off any number of teams that could or would be interested but aren't going to part with
right.
pieces from your their current team because they're in contending mode? Would you want to cut off those teams as available trade partners just to do it right now? That's why I think the easiest message is suck it up and we'll make some decisions in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say someone doesn't come in and knock your socks off. And I think that's why you have those conversations to understand if someone's willing to do it. But like to get from here to there, think about like, so let's just work through this in a really simplistic way. Okay. And I hate if I'm oversimplifying it, but let's say number one, you've made the determination that these two guys cannot coexist on the same team, okay? Which I still think is a relatively big leap to make for players that have played together for a long time. Two, the next determination you need to make is that you don't think that Pettersson can live up to his contract based on the way that he's played. or that you don't think he can do it with your team in your market, which is another really interesting line to draw, because it's less than a calendar year ago that they signed and pushed to give him this deal. So again, working through those things and then getting to the in-season trade part, it's really hard to do.
Yeah. It feels like an impossible task. And then you're obviously thinking in the back of your mind, like, well, you know, we know how the history of these trades generally go. Jack Eichel would be one. If you're trading a franchise centerman, and Elias Pettersson is certainly that, like, you're coming out on the losing end of that deal more often than not. And as much as I like JT Miller, you know, you're not going too far with JT Miller as your number one center, and I don't know who as who's the next guy behind him, because mm-hmm. this team needs those guys to be able to even possibly enter the Stanley Cup contender conversation, which they aren't right now. But if they're at their best, like we saw last year, then you're in that conversation. If you lose one of those two guys, you're not even close.
Right, which is okay. So then, let me add in another layer to this, which I reported yesterday, is that there's at least a handful of teams that I've talked to that are really intrigued, obviously, by the player. Mm-hmm. But because of all that's gone on, all the innuendo and hearsay, they don't know what's true and what isn't. And they just rather steer clear. And they don't know if they'd... I should say they know that they don't want to inject whatever that might be into their locker room. I'm talking about both players
mm-hmm. yeah.
right at this period in time. They'd rather let the dust settle and see what happens as opposed to jumping all over it right now.
Well, and I think, you know, the Pettersson one is the one where it's the most difficult one to make. The JT Miller one, because of his age and the contract not being quite as big, I think it could be more intriguing as far as in season. But at the same time, you mentioned teams steering clear of the situation with Vancouver because they don't know what's what. As far as JT is concerned, a team can look at it negatively and say, well, he had some run-ins with the Rangers. He had some problems there, right? And now he's on his third team, another problem here. Do we want to bring that into our team? And if we do, and he's a player who's obviously has a little bit of risk to him, what are teams willing to give up? And as we talked about before for Pettersson, like, they want a very high ask. But for JT, even if the ask isn't quite as high, is the team willing to give a premium to acquire that player right now with everything that's gone on?
No, which is why he's not on my trade board. And it's just Pettersson.
Yeah.
I think of all the things that we just said, I think the easier player to trade right now is Pettersson. One, because you're unencumbered. Two, because he's way younger. And three, because he has the higher ceiling. And teams are tantalized by, what if we're getting the 40-goal, 100-plus-point franchise center? I mean, JT Miller could be that, but for how long? And plus those other factors that you mentioned, and the fact that he'd have to approve any deal that comes down the pike.
Well, we saw JT play maybe his best game in a while last night, and maybe probably his best game of the season, really. And the message coming out of the Canucks room, Demko said it today with Ian McIntyre. We've heard Hughes say this. Seems like Tocchet is as this is all happening and the speculation, the noise has grown outside the room, Tocchet's message to the team has just become like, hey, you guys start winning, all this goes away. And I think he's really hoping that hits.
It's true, because here's the thing, like, I've known about this friction going back multiple years. It has not been a secret. It just hasn't been a talking point because, well, on every team, I can name you five other situations like this. There's teammates that don't see eye to eye, and it's a very normal thing. And it's a normal thing in any workplace of people that don't get along. So the fact that they had the success that they did last year, in a year in which almost everything that could go right did, we didn't hear boo about this because they found a way to coexist. And now all of a sudden this year, it's been inconsistent. There's been a lot of injuries. And then there was this mysterious absence from JT Miller that, you know, probably could have been explained a lot better, that might have not flared all this up. Plus the idea that, to be honest, I think the entire organization hasn't messaged this well, that it becomes, it gets a life of its own. And instead of like a 1 or 2 day thing, this has been, there's something new, a new layer added to this every week, it feels like. Mm-hmm. And the volume gets turned up to 13, and you end up in a spot where it's no good for anyone, let alone the team itself trying to win, let alone you trying to create actual value for trade pieces, if that's what you wanted to accomplish.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we've heard a lot of, you know, reporting on the situation about the friction and on the team listening on calls, but we haven't heard a ton of specifics on, you know, which teams are involved specifically for these players outside of some speculation. We saw one report that suggested Zibanejad was offered for JT Miller. And I think on the Rangers front, they look like a team that people look at and say, well, they have a lot of people reporting that JT is front of center for them and a player that they're really after. Do you get the sense that the Rangers truly want JT Miller as badly as some of the reports are suggesting?
I think they'd be interested, but only at a certain cost. And also, if you do them a huge favor, like, well, I don't know why, you know, look at some of the other contracts that they're trying to jettison. You know, any deal in which, if this is a hypothetical, or I don't know if it was an actual real conversation or what, I did see some of the reporting, but I don't quite understand it. Any deal in which you're taking Mika Zibanejad back, you're losing every single time. So I guess, you know, he's extended the same amount of time through 2030, has some of the same encumbrances in terms of no move, no trade, but to pay more to get a lesser player who, in my opinion, isn't anywhere near the driver of play that JT Miller is, like, I don't even know what you're talking about. It doesn't even make sense. It doesn't compute.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. Another Canuck who didn't make your trade list is Brock Besser, whose contract is coming up at the end of the season. We haven't heard a lot percolating as far as contract talks. And, you know, there's still 2 months to the deadline. I mean, exactly 2 months to the deadline today. So there is some time to figure this out. Although that Four Nations Cup takes 2 weeks out and creates a little bit of an obstacle in the middle of all this in the next couple of months. But when would you say the rubber has to hit the road here as far as figuring things out with Brock Besser?
I don't think it does, to be honest. Unless the Canucks are out of it, I don't think there's, I know, I should say, I don't think there's no rush from either side. The Canucks aren't jumping into any negotiations. They want to see how Brock puts a bow on this season, and we're only halfway through it. And Brock is happy to stay in Vancouver, but, you know, this has very much been propositioned as a prove-it season. You know, you've been in up and down and sideways and all over the place in the last few years, and he's found a way to produce, but what is the true Brock Besser consistent production? Is it closer to 28 goals? Is it closer to 40? And then what kind of pay scale are we talking about here? So I think it's been very cordial. To my understanding, there have been zero negotiations to this point, and no one really has any need to do something, because they feel like as long as this team is in the mix, that he's going to play it out and get to a spot where both sides sit down across from each other and say, is this something we're going to do or not? And they'll find a way to do it if so.
It just, like, from a asset management point of view, you spent a lot to bring in Zadorov and Lindholm last year. Obviously, they walked as unrestricted free agents as rentals. Given that this team doesn't have a lot of assets to try and make a big kind of move, it would be hard to lose Brock Besser for nothing in the summer if that's what it came to for the Canucks.
I mean, it would.
Yeah.
But it would be worse to make a long-term deal at a number that makes you uncomfortable.
Right.
That I think people don't necessarily fully appreciate with players, the idea of the opportunity cost and what you could do with that money. So agree, which is why I premised and prefaced my answer last time based on if the Canucks are out of it, then that's a different story. But I don't see that happening. And the return of Quinn Hughes, and at some point the return of Phil Aronic, and at some point you're thinking that this front office is going to go out and get you a defenseman, it'll vastly change the look and feel of the Canucks. And we can talk about this JT Miller and Elias Pettersson situation until we're blue in the face, and you guys literally do every day. But the real story of this Canucks season is not that. It's that they haven't had a full team on the ice all season. And even when they do, I think it's deficient on the blue line, and that's wreaked havoc on their ability to play consistently.
Yeah, they desperately need a defenseman, and it's Hronek has really been missed. I think that was overshadowed a little bit by Hughes' absence, but they're just not getting a lot beyond that top pair right now, beyond Hughes. You got your latest trade targets list coming out today. It's up and available at Daily Faceoff right now. How is the defense market sort of developing here as we get closer to the trade deadline? Are there more interesting names becoming available?
Not quite. It's gotten thinner. Like, we had the Cam Fowler trade. We've had some extensions, including Jake McCabe, and I was doubting that he would even make it to market anyway. But it's a lot of guys who have been out there for a period of time that, you know, there aren't, I guess what I should say is there aren't any interesting, new, intriguing possibilities. Is Bowen Byram available in Buffalo? Sure he is. Would the Columbus Blue Jackets trade Ivan Provorov, even though he's signaled an interest in staying? Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the right price, they would. Does Rasmus Ristolainen excite you? Does Will Borgen? He's, I think, a lowercase addition, a check down option. I think a really solid defender, but I don't necessarily know the style of defenseman that they're looking for. Zach Jones has been given permission in New York to talk to teams about a trade, but the Canucks already have a couple guys like Zach Jones. I mean, maybe Keandre Miller is someone that fits a lot of what they might be looking for. He's got size. He's incredibly mobile and athletic. Like, to be that big and skate as well as he does, the Rangers, if they decide to part with him, are going to get a haul for him. But I'm not sold on his ability to play consistently enough and his decision-making processor, that it's, there's a reason why the Rangers might consider doing it. So it's a really long-winded way of saying, I don't really love what the defense market looks like. Yeah. And kind of clear that the Canucks don't either.
Yeah, it's clear. And I think the fact that they haven't gone for one of those check down options, like you said, tells you that they're still looking for somebody of higher quality, but haven't been able to figure that out either. I did also want to ask
and
you.
I just don't know where that's coming from, Sat.
Like, no, it's true.
I go through these rosters on a daily basis, and I'm not, unless there's something that's totally unexpected, like, I'm not seeing it.
What do you think this also creates a situation now where we see 32 teams, we see more teams being involved in the playoff race right now too, and there is a scarcity of these types of players that if you don't get your players in the offseason, that you don't have a chance to really find those answers in season anymore?
Yes, and I think it's from a both perspective, trade and free agency. If you got one of those guys, you're keeping them for the most part. Like, Zadorov is a really unique example because he was commanding a premium based on, I think, play that was probably unsustainable. And like, if you were to inject some truth serum into the Bruins, like, as much as the Canucks might miss him this year, I think he's had some wobbles that he's had at various other stops in his career. that I think the Canucks just drew a line and said, hey, we like you, but only this much. And it is really hard to get your hands on those guys, which is why more often than not, they don't make it to market and don't make it to the trade market because there's just so few of them.
Well, I mean, I was going to actually ask you about the Bruins, and that leads into Zadorov to some extent as well. I mean, they made the coaching change. They've lost four in a row, five of their last six, and they sit third in the division in terms of points, but they played 42 games, 4 to 5 games more than a lot of their compatriots in that division. So that's a team that obviously isn't figuring it out. You mentioned there is some concern about Zadorov, and that hasn't worked out. I know they want to make some moves, but could they do something relatively drastic? Not Marchand, but, like, you know, do they find a way to maybe punt on Zadorov this season or this offseason? Like, does something big come down the pipe here trade-wise from Boston?
I mean, that would be one way to open it up. I'd be surprised on Marchand. Like, I don't know how they replace an emotional engine like that. And not to say that it's not possible for a team that's been through Bergeron and Chara in the last handful of years. It's possible, but he's still been a really impactful player that had got a little bit of a slow start this year based on the trio of surgeries he had in the summer, that I think there's a way to find a reasonable number for Brad Marchand, just in the same way that he's been playing on a reasonable number this whole time, even though he's already 36. I think for better or for worse, it's not that the Zadorov contract isn't movable. It is, but I just think there's limitations to his game that, you know, could you find someone interested? Sure. Is it enough to make you want to do it? I don't know.
Before we let you go, you got Brock Nelson at the top of your trade targets list, and it's always curious what Lou Lamoriello is going to do. I would imagine Nelson is going to have a lineup out the door, maybe around the corner, if the Islanders do really try to make him available for trade here.
Well, part of it also speaks to, if you think the defense market is thin, I think it's even tougher to find impact centers. Yeah. And so that's why Nelson jumps to the top of the board. I think he's the premier rental center available on the market. He's had a down year, but he can be a really consistent scorer and a difficult guy to play against. And I think there's some really clear interest in Minnesota. He's a Minnesota native for one, but two, Bill Guerin, their GM, went out of his way to pick Nelson for the Four Nations Faceoff team. And I think that spoke volumes about how they feel about Nelson. And also, I just think it's time on Long Island. Like, he's a lifelong Islander. He's 33. Palmieri is the same age. I don't know how they could possibly sell to their fan base that it makes sense to extend these core guys, given where that team is at, that they've got to cash in and do something differently, because they're ramming their head on the cinder block wall there, trying to do the same thing over and over again.
We always get questions about Noah Dobson. Alex Romanov is also a restricted free agent defenseman with the New York Islanders.
Wait a second. Why do you always get questions?
Well, because people would love the idea of Noah Dobson being a Vancouver Canuck.
It's like he's a right-hand defenseman and
it scores a lot of points.
Yeah. Basically.
But he's not going to play on the power play.
Yeah. No, I know. You have the best power play defenseman in the league, right? Pretty much, right? So it's
right. So why, like, you already have one of those. He just happens to play the other hand.
Yeah.
And your guy's better. So, like, wouldn't you be better suited getting a different stylistic fit?
100%. I think that's something, you know, you'd love the talent, but yeah, it's maybe not the best fit for the Vancouver Canucks. But I also wonder about Alex Romanov. Like, there's only so many long-term contracts Lou can give out to defensemen. Could that be an RFA-type defenseman that ends up being available in trade?
Yeah, I could see that for sure. I had Alexander Romanov on my list as potential candidates for the trade targets board. Decided to not go down that path now because, based on the Palmieri and Nelson questions, I think they've got some bigger fish to fry. But I also am really curious, outside of the Islanders, what is Romanov's ceiling? Like, what is he truly? Where would he stack up on a good team? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a fair question to ask, even at this point at the age of 25.
Frank, we always appreciate the time. Thanks for this.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
There is Frank Saravalli on Sports at 650, brought to you by Angry Otter Liquor. With the holidays around the corner, score big on game day. Specials at Angry Otter Liquor, including $5 off Coors Light 24 packs. And if you're looking for your favorite culinary content, Food Network has all new seasons of your favorite food shows on channel 410 on Rogers Xfinity TV. Not sure if they have like an episode of like, hey, what's the Feast of the Seven Fishes? But they've got a lot of good stuff.
They
Who doesn't
do?
Love a good food show?
With so many fishes.
Fish?
It's a lot of fish.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, you know what, the best type of fish to make
It's also
is...
the greatest bear episode ever made.
Yes, that is
the Feast
true.
Of
Real
the Seven
good.
Fish.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I mean, and then but season two of The Bear is just...
It's very good, and season three, not very good.
Oh, season three, right.
Yeah.
It's trash. I don't know how... It's going to probably win all these awards, and it was absolute trash. But, yeah.
All right.
We got a break.
Not on the Food Network, but we got to go. We got Jennifer Gardner joining us next. Montreal Victoire forward, and of course, Surrey's very own. That's next on Canuck Central.
Catch up on what happened in Vancouver sports with Halford and Brough in the morning. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.